to bring this House Fisheries Committee to order. It is 8:36, and today we have before us two items. The first one will be HCR 22, which is a regulation on fisheries, sponsored by myself. And then we will be continuing with our hearing on public testimony on HB 134. And then I plan to take, if we can get through committee discussion and all public testimony, we will make a decision on what we want to do with HB 134 at that time. I think that we do have some amendments that will be before us on that bill, and then I think we'll have done all we can with that bill. It's been a long process. Is there anything else before we get started to come before the committee? If not, I'll pass the gavel to Representative Johansson, the vice chair, while I introduce the resolution.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And HCR 22 is a resolution trying to clarify for the people of Alaska and the courts in case of a challenge as what the legislative intent is behind current statutes by which the Board of Fisheries manages our fisheries, and that they use many different determinations on what those regulations entail, including time and area closures, vessel size, gear limits, trip limits, and different districts and administrative areas. There has come up a question based on the Supreme Court decisions in the Gernert case, which was related to a fishery in which non-participants were allowed to gain resource or gain monetary value, even though they didn't participate in the fishery. There are some fallouts from that case that are being interpreted to mean that possibly we could not have many of the allocation issues and many of the criteria used, which are currently used in our fisheries management, such as vessel size limits, gear restrictions, sub-districts, and those kind of things. So what we're trying to do here is tell the people of Alaska and the courts of what our legislative intent is on the history of how we have managed these regulations, and just verifying that we interpret the current statutes to allow allocations based on those principles. So one would want to remember that when the courts go to make a decision, they first look at the clear reading of the statute. If the statutes are unclear, then they go to legislative intent, and that's what we're doing here. If there's any ambiguity in the statutes, and some folks believe there are, then you look at legislative intent. I would draw the committee's attention to, we are not attempting to make a definition used in the Constitution. If we were trying to make a legislative intent of a constitutional definition, then the court would consider that, wouldn't probably even consider that at all. They would consider a totally different, their own reading on that. However, on legislative statutes, those are what we pass, what we control, and the intent of what we mean in our readings of the definitions do have weight in that case. So I offer this resolution to the committee, and as you can see, there's a number of whereases in this that talks about the history of the fisheries and some of the ways in which the board has made these allocations determinations. We have vessel size limits used in such fisheries as the Kodiak Groundfish Fishery for Pacific Cod, which is a state watered managed fishery. In that case, we have a situation where the larger vessels can participate up until the catch. There's basically 25% of the catch is reserved for those vessels under under 60 feet. We also have the fishery that's been a longstanding fishery in Prince William Sound, which has different classifications by vessel size. We have area-based allocations within an area, and that is a historic in Bristol Bay. We have areas by different streams, different whether it's the Naknek, Kwejek, however, it's all covered by one fisheries entry permit. It's all within the Bristol Bay administrative area, but you have different streams, and those quotas and those times and those areas are set. And also, vessels have to choose which areas they're going to participate in. There's a time lag between they can participate in one area and when they can move to another area. There's also what's called super exclusive registration, which means that if you participate in one area, you cannot participate in another area, but that's your choice under your permit to decide which area you're going to participate under. So this is trying to get to that clarification on our existing statute so that the courts will understand that. This also has been addressed by the committee previously under House Bill 188, which we've heard several times from Representative Wilson's bill. That bill does have some Christmas tree problems, that, and there, so there's been some difficulties with that. And so this is an attempt to get a solution that is, has been sought through a statutory change by interpretation of our existing current statutes. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'd leave that there unless you have questions.
Thank you. Before we go on, we should recognize the full committee being in attendance, Representative Johnson, Ledoux, Wilson, Chairman Seaton, myself, Representative Edgman, and Representative Holmes. Any questions for the sponsor? Representative Ledoux?
Is there anybody from legal on that I might be able to ask a question of?
We can get him. We do have two legal opinions in your packet, and we can get Brian Kane on to do that. There's also folks from the Department of Fish and Game here, and we'll find out if we have anybody from the Department of Law.
Well, I think Louie's setting that up, so if we'll have any other questions, we can get back to law for specific questions. Anything else for the sponsor? I had just a general question. I'm not sure. Resolution versus bill. The bill is in our committee, and I wasn't aware of any Christmas tree problems because we haven't added anything to it. And I'm wondering, why are we not pushing the bill, and why do we have a resolution that is really non-binding, and it just basically gives our opinion? I just don't know kind of what's going on. Maybe you could walk me through that.
Sure. House Bill 188 is a bill that has come forward. There has been a number of attempts to add other things onto that bill. And so the chairman of the committee has decided that we're holding that bill because of those issues that have come forward, whether it's on Chignik Co-op and other things. Those things can't be added on to a resolution that is talking about the interpretation of current regulations. What we have is a speculative problem of saying, gee, a lawsuit that went forward against that other provision might have some implications on current regulations. I think that this interpretation of our current regulations and the authority of the board to utilize those techniques that they have been historically using sets out the question, and the question that has been brought to us by the Board of Fisheries or by the legal department from the Board of Fisheries was that they were worried about current statutes being at risk that have been longstanding and in place. And so I believe that if we identify clearly that the legislative intent on the statutes, which are the basis for those regulations, is clear, then I don't think we have the problem. And this takes care of the problem that was brought up without the other problems that could be associated with it.
I see. I guess I haven't done my homework. I just don't remember discussing those things in committee. We may have. We've done a lot of work in this committee, but I just don't remember that happening. Representative Wilson?
Thank you. Since I'm the sponsor of the bill that isn't being heard, I think we have to talk about this a little bit because it's that's what this is. It's just taking the only changes that the sponsor, myself, made was clarification. Just to make sure, because there were people that had real concerns, and all that did was to cover those concerns and to tighten up the language so that it would take care and make sure that certain things couldn't happen. And that's where the bill is now.
Okay. I don't want to get too far off the legislation that we have officially in front of us. But
I do have concerns the same as you do, though, whether a simple resolution is going to do the job. And I would much prefer a bill. But if a bill won't be forthcoming, this is better than nothing. Okay. And that's, I guess, where I'm coming from.
Thank you. We have Representative Edgeman, and then Johnson, and then Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess I would add my voice to the concerns that you raised, and certainly Representative Wilson, and you know, the fact that a resolution is non-binding, it's advisory, it's sort of a message from the legislature, and whether that carries the weight that the Department of Law feels is necessary to, you know, be effective in terms of conveying that the original intent is as expressed. But the other point I think I'd like to bring in front of law is whether a House concurrent resolution as opposed to a resolution of both bodies would have that type of weight that we're trying to apply to this whole measure.
Thank you. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I don't see where it's any more difficult to amend a resolution than it is a bill. We could amend this resolution to put any of the things that are egregious, the Chitnik, co-op, anything we wanted. It could be amended in a future committee or on the floor. And quite honestly, I think it would be easier to amend a resolution because of the non-binding nature of it than it would be to bind a statute. So if the concern is Christmas tree, I think the resolution probably has a greater opportunity to have things added onto it than a piece of than a statute.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
You want to respond, Representative Seaton?
Yes. I mean, I think that was a question. And There were really two questions. One, a House concurrent resolution is a resolution that passes through both bodies. We have a House joint resolution, House concurrent resolution, and the difference is whether we are talking to the federal government where we would use and giving them advice, whether we would use a joint resolution or a concurrent resolution where we are telling we are setting out policies within the state. So the That's a structure, but both will pass through both bodies. The question of a bill or a resolution, a bill can change current statute, and then we can, you know, that does make a difference. You cannot, in a resolution, change a judicial opinion that has already been rendered. We could come in and change the statute on which the basis of that judicial opinion is made, and therefore then we can reverse things through a bill. You cannot do that through a resolution. You're not going to be able to. This shows legislative intent, which is the second tier in which you make determinations. First is a clear reading of a statute. If the statute is unclear, then you go to legislative intent. The courts have already determined that in the Grunert case, there is clear statutory authority. They've had that clear reading. They haven't looked at legislative intent. So by resolution, we would not be able to overturn something that's been determined by the court.
Thank you. Representative, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and I don't think that goes to the heart of the matter. I certainly understand the difference between a statute and a resolution, but we could certainly amend this resolution if you said your concern with the statute was that it was being Christmas treed and things were being put on it and that it wasn't moving. There is nothing keeping this from being Christmas treed and have things added onto it. No, it will not have the same effect, but this could end up with legislative intent that is counter to what I think the sponsor, maybe anyone in this committee, wants. And to hold a bill because it's being Christmas treed, this will not, I guess I wanted to say, do we have the same issue with this we would the bill? So I guess that's kind of, I understand the difference between a resolution and a statute.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux?
Is the gentleman from Legal on here?
Are you ready for the questions for Legal? He is online. I thought you had something other than that. Are you ready for?
Well, this whole discussion relates to the questions from Legal.
Would you like to address Mr. Kane?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Kane. So I'm just sort of wondering, because I am concerned with what could happen to either House Bill 188, Representative Wilson's bill, or this resolution once it leaves here. Would it be possible to change a resolution into a bill on the floor of the House or on the floor of the Senate, Christmas treeing in, for example, scallop fisheries, Chignik Co-op, hair crab, some of those other issues that we've been discussing in this committee? Can a resolution metamorphize into a bill through the committee process or on the floor of either chamber?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, once something's entered as a resolution, I believe it stays a resolution throughout. Committee could certainly take the basis for a resolution and have a bill drafted based on what the resolution says, but the actual resolution itself will remain as a resolution with, you know, and a bill will not have the, you know, the whereas or the be it resolved portions, and so the resolution will remain as such, but they could take that, the idea behind it, and try and turn it into a bill, but they're separate documents.
Mr. Kane, can you identify yourself and your position for the record, please?
Yes, I am Brian Kane with Legislative Legal.
Thank you. Follow-up?
One other question. Normally, when a court looks at legislative intent, it goes back and it determines what the legislature that enacted a specific law was thinking about, and it will go back in, at least this is my understanding, would go back into the committee records, the debate on the floor of the House or the other chamber, etc. Would a court look to a resolution of a legislature that hadn't enacted a bill to determine what the legislative intent was of a legislature that enacted the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this is Brian Kane again with Legal. I believe the court will, they're not required, obviously, to look at any of this intent language unless they feel it helped in their determination of a case. And I cannot tell you definitively where resolution falls in line. I understand what you're asking, and I believe a court would take into account a resolution stating that this is the interpretation of this legislature on how this certain section or a certain statutory section should be interpreted. It might weigh that the resolution language with what the intent was in the committee meetings back when this piece of legislation was passed in the first place, regarding the fisheries allocations. But as for where the resolution falls in line, I would have to research that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benjamin, did you want to address Ledge Legal on your question? Or?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Morning, Brian. My question, and we discussed it a moment ago, is the effect of a House concurrent resolution, as the bill sponsor pointed out, versus a House joint resolution in terms of carrying the full weight of the legislature and in an advisory, of course, non-binding manner. But can you discuss that for a moment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the main difference between the two is just that the one is the House urging on its own, or the Senate, whichever side it's coming from, whereas I think the difference of the concurrent is essentially what you said. Neither is binding, so they're both just advisory, or they're hoping to encourage some sort of action. So I think it adds a little more effect if it's both houses speaking together as opposed to just one house speaking on its own.
No follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wilson?
Thank you. Mr. Kane, I have a question. When we're looking at a bill versus a resolution, obviously the bill has much more force and power. What is your opinion of this resolution specifically, as it is really only saying what the House at this time is thinking, and not what the legislature at the time that this statute was put in place was thinking?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, could you repeat that question one more time for me?
In your personal opinion, do you think that this resolution is going to do any good, I guess is what I'm asking, because of the fact that it's saying what the legislature now thinks, not what the legislature was thinking when they put the statute into place?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think as I answered a little earlier, I would have to look into, you know, where the court takes into account a resolution. That would have to be a question I'd have to look back and see how the courts have treated a resolution of a current body versus the language when a statute was put in place. But you could also keep in mind that I believe the Grunert decision and has come about since this statutory section was put in place. So there has been a different interpretation by the court, I guess, potentially of this statute, and at least specifically with the Grunert decision. So something has changed where this legislature's opinion on the topic might carry a little more weight because, you know, we've had a court decision in between its enactment and where we are now that speaks more on what the statute actually says.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Kane, if you can crawl inside the mind of a judge and tell me what he's going to do, you're working in the wrong place. Representative Ledoux.
Is this usual or unusual? Have you ever seen this before, where a legislature, either in this state or any other state, has put forth a resolution indicating legislative intent and a court has considered that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that I would have to look into that. I haven't seen it personally, but I haven't been here as many years as some others, so it hasn't come across my desk necessarily, but I would have to research further to find out if there's some precedent for this, or how the court would treat it, or if it's been done in the past specifically in this manner.
Any other questions for Mr. Kane?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Benjamin.
Thank you. I don't see time and area closures in the bill, and I see gear limits and trip limits, and I asked the sponsor about that before the meeting started this morning. But was that by design, or are these terms that are in the bill sufficient to cover time and area closures? Maybe that's a better question for Fish and Game when they come to the table, but can you respond to that, please?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I used the language that I was asked to use for these qualifications. So I think Fish and Game is probably the best answer, or the sponsor of the bill. These particular categories were not of my choosing necessarily. I drafted it as was requested.
I'll ask that later, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really think it's hard for this committee to make a decision on this resolution when they don't understand why the resolution is here, because the bill itself was brought up it was scheduled for May 2nd, May 4th, and May 9th, but it was never discussed. So I think it's kind of hard for the committee to really, the chairman asked me to kind of look at it and see if I could tighten it up, which I did. And so I think it's kind of hard for the committee to make a decision when we haven't actually talked about the other bill in committee. So I just might be a good idea to bring the other bill up so that we could compare and see what the differences are and stuff like that. Just a thought.
Okay. Representative, any other questions for the sponsor? Would you like to respond or sum up before we go to public testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question of time and area closures, the purpose of this resolution is to address the potential challenges that were brought up earlier to make sure that those things were covered. I don't believe that time and area closures, openings and closings, were brought up as in any way even a possible effect of Grunert. Now, I have no problem of adding time and area closure in here if either the Department of Law thinks that it would be helpful. This is not meant to be as a definitive list, but at listing all types of management tools that the that Fish and Game can use, or the Board of Fisheries can use in managing fisheries. It was just meant to clarify the legislative intent that the current statutes that have been the basis for openings and allocations based on vessel size, based on discrete areas, either whether you're talking about super exclusive area or sub-districts like in Bristol Bay, that those things are within the parameters of what we have historically used and what the statutes have been used for. They have not been challenged before, and this is in response to questions, not a direct decision by the courts, but just a question that, which is, I consider, pretty speculative, that there might be a challenge to some of these techniques based on a court decision. So this is just clarifying that those existing statute provisions that we have are in what our intent, or what we believe the intent of the legislature, and how those were adopted, and we don't think they were adopted in contradiction to law. And so that's the response to the time and area closure that I have, Mr. Chairman.
Did we actually have the bill in front of us at any time at the committee last year? I know it was noticed, but did we have a discussion on it?
I believe we did. We had several hearings on the bill, I believe. And in fact, that's why the I'll have the committee staff research the hearings. But that's where those questions came up, and there were some amendments requested. And so I believe we did. So
I guess my next question is, did we have bills previously heard noticed on this meeting?
well, and Mr. Chairman, just to remind everyone, We have a ethics opinion, which I disagreed with strongly, from 2 years ago, that if a bill is heard in one session and it's held for a long period of time, it cannot be brought up under our ethics rules, under bills previously heard without additional notice for the public. Just so.
That was a very long time defined. I'm kind of curious about that. Anyway, I'm just kind of messing with you, Mr. Chairman.
No, that's fine. I just, I know Mr. Chairman, I understand perfectly, and I just wanted to let everybody know that there is that situation.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick comment.
Representative Edgman?
Yes, and somewhat of the defense of the bill sponsor, House Bill 88, that we did hear, I guess, last year, really finds some of my constituents and directly at odds with each other. And this, you know, I think we're going to be discussing some other small little project here next that has the same situation. But this whole the House Bill 188 really engendered a fair amount of controversy in our office because people either supported it or they were out and out against it, and passionately so. Doesn't that sound familiar? Anyway, I think what the bill sponsors have to do is to find some middle ground, and we're all questioning and finding whether that's the adequate route to take. So I just want to put that on the record.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux?
Just on the record, I looked. Bills previously heard were not scheduled today.
Hey, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
A question was answered, or was asked, and so we looked back at the records, and we had three hearings on the bill on 5-2, 5-4, and 5-9. Yeah. It was introduced earlier, and then there was a sponsor substitute was offered on 4-27. But then we did have three hearings on the bill.
Okay. Anything else before we go to public testimony?
I apologize for that because I was given the wrong information.
Representative
Wilson. So
thank you. We're going to go to public testimony. In Kodiak, do we have Kip Tomei or Tomet? Could you identify yourself and your affiliation, please?
Yes. My name is Kip Tomet. I'm a Kodiak resident, and I'm here just to tell you that I support this resolution, this HCR 22. I think that this is all it would take, and I feel that I've got concerns about giving the Board of Fish a new tool or another tool that could be used for something other than the intended use of the legislature. As I believe the board just did in their recent decision, in their decision to allow permit stacking in the Kodiak set net fishery, they had a new tool. The tool I thought was designed to consolidate a fleet up in Bristol Bay, and this board decided to use this tool not to consolidate the fishery, but for other reasons. So I like this resolution, and I'll support the chairman on it.
Thank you. Alexis Quacha.
Hey, good morning. For the record, my name is Alexis Quachka. I too also support HCR 22 and its intent. I cannot support HB 188 for some of the reasons Kip just mentioned. I just we need to set a clear path to where we're going, and I think that a lot of these things, even though they don't seem open ended, become very open ended in reality. I don't mind giving the Board of Fish the tools to operate under current fisheries, but I don't want to open or have any loopholes for them to interpret that as going in a different direction. And I think the intent of HCR 22 will do that. And just for time's sake, I'm going to say I also support HB 134, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay, Alexis, are you representing yourself?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Anybody else in Kodiak?
No.
Okay, thank you. We have Julie Kavanaugh, OffNet. Julie, can you identify your affiliation, please?
My name is Julie Kavanaugh, and I'm representing myself. We live in Kodiak, my family does, and have commercially fished from Ketchikan to Accutan for 34 years. I support HCR 22 in that it affirms the intent of state law to provide the Board of Fish necessary tools and authority to allocate fishery resources within a fishery based on vessel size, gear limits, registration areas, and specific sub-districts defined or acknowledged to be separate management areas. It is also important to highlight that all fisheries resources are managed for the maximum benefit of all Alaskans and for conservation, while maintaining the intent of the Limited Entry Act. Therefore, the Board of Fish must be implored to implement and extend only those management regimes consistent with active participation and individual access rights. Insofar as HCR 22 supports the Board of Fish's ability to manage such allocations as per these requirements, I am in favor of such a resolution. There is a desire to add language to HB 188 that would allow for unwanted intentions, and that bill is vulnerable, even with tightened language. I would encourage this committee to consider adding language to HCR 22 supporting active participation access and access going only to an individual. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Rick Metzger, are you online? Rick Metzger? Okay, Rick is not responding. Clem Tillian, are you there?
Am I still on?
Yeah, Clem Tillian, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. This is Clem Tillian. I represent the Elliott Enterprise Corporation at this one. And I think I very much support this resolution, but I wanted to ask a question. 2 years ago, the board took a portion of the Aleutian Island Bering Sea cod allocation to be used in the Aleutian Islands for a state water fishery. It was 3% of the allocation of the Bering Sea Aleutian Islands, which naturally is a much larger chunk just in the Aleutians. We wanted to make room for a small boat fleet, i.e. the Aleut fleet there, King Cove Sand Point, to come out and fish. We had a few from Kodiak and a few from a couple from Homer came out. The small boats ran all the way out there, but the season was available to all vessel sizes under 100 feet. The net result was the season lasted 1 week. The little boats survived because everybody got one trip. It was calm weather. But this year, the little boats aren't even going to come out because the risk of spending that much fuel to come all the way out to Adak and maybe fish, maybe not, maybe have the big boats fill the quarter while you were stormbound is just too big a risk. What we wanted the board to do was allocate 50% of the state water fishery to vessels under 60 feet. And Department of Law said they could not do it under the Grunhardt decision. They would be allowed to make it all under 60 or none of it under 60. And the board was unwilling to wipe out those boats that had been out there, the larger boats, already fishing. So this, in effect, resulted in the small boat fleet being wiped out. I want to make sure this resolution makes it plain to the Department of Law and the board that they could allocate 50% of the in-water, state water fishery to vessels under 60 feet. Otherwise, we're not going to have a local resident fleet because there was no way that small boats could fish that far out in the chain until Adak Fisheries and ATCA started buying fish. I'm willing to support the resolution if it gets me where I want to go. I'm asking you whether it does.
Thank you, Mr. Tillian. Does the sponsor want to respond?
It, Yeah, in answer to that question, I would draw the committee's attention to page 2, lines 18, where it says, whereas existing state fishery management plan for state waters allocate portions of a fishery based on vessel size class, and that recognizes that not 100% has to be by a certain size class. And that is evident in what we talked about in the Kodiak state water pecod fishery, where certain percentages are reserved for the smaller vessels, and I believe that that is fully within the statutory definitions that we are reaffirming with this resolution.
Thank you. Mr. Tillian, did you want to add a comment to that at the end?
If it will reach that, I support it. I'm leery about not doing it in legislation, but I see the danger that you're worried about of Chignik Co-op rearing its ugly head again. I'm not that strong against it. I just want to make sure that our small boat Alaskan-based fleets don't run all the way out several hundred miles to find out that the season only lasts a week. I need to have some protection for the small boat fleet. If you feel this resolution does that, I support it wholeheartedly.
Thank you, Mr. Tillian. Jamie Ross, are you online?
Did you hear me?
Yep.
Yes, this is Jamie Ross here. Well, I guess I come on the heels of Mr. Tillian there. Hi, Jamie Ross from Homer, Alaska. I represent the Chignik Seafood Producers Alliance, and I'm one of the creators of the Chignik Co-op. And boy, I have so much to say. No, there's not enough time to say it. But I certainly take exception, Mr. Tillian, to this co-op rearing its ugly head. You folks know better than I, being lawmakers. But as we all know, and half of the bills probably in the entire country, federal, state, et cetera, are the result of legal actions that change the accepted standard or understanding of what was commonly held practice. And the Board of Fish operated for, well, since statehood or since the 60s, whenever they became into existence, under certain statutory guidelines. And the statutory guidelines they were under, all that it said was that the board has broad powers essentially to do almost anything and everything in the management of fisheries. And that's what the Board of Fish operated under for many, many years until the Gruner decision. And this is the case, just as in every state in the union and in the federal government, things operate. Numerous laws are created and overturned by courts on a daily basis. So just because something changed, that's just a normal way of law, as you folks well know. The problem that we face now and what we're all faced, not just Chignik, but many, many, many fisheries around the state, is because of this lawsuit, because of the overturning of a long-standing law that the Board of Fish operated under for years, the rules have changed. And from what I understand, after listening to and reading the Ledge Legal decision, and also having discussions with Lance Nelson from the Department of Law, and also from, I guess, on Monday, there was discussions of a resolution with regard to the Pebble Mine Bill, and what we say there is that a resolution has no basis in law. All it is just like a feel-good about something. It does nothing to solve the legal problem. And like I said, as was stated on Monday with regard to the Pebble Bill. So this resolution will do nothing to actually solve the problem that the state of Alaska faces and numerous fisheries around the state face. Now, everybody seems to have an issue with the Chignik Co-op. We operated for 5 years, and we did have active participation, and we produced one of the finest quality sockeye salmon in the state of Alaska. And we competed on a world marketplace. We were getting $1.30 a pound for our product out in western Alaska. The year after the co-op was gone, we fell to 70 cents a pound, and now there's 55 families out of business in Chignik. There's only 45 out of 100 permit holders that participated last summer. And that's a terrible thing. That's a terrible thing to see more. 75% of the people in Chignik are Alaska residents, and it's a terrible thing to see these people out of business. The majority of those folks are Alaska residents that are out of business. And I fished there last summer, and it made me sick to roll the big bags of fish over the rail and just produce crap quality like we had done for decades. And I don't want to go into that and debate this, but this legislature was asked in the decision by the Gruner decision, the Supreme Court said all that needs to be done to fix this problem, not just for Chignik, but for the state of Alaska, is to pass a simple bill. And we had a bill in front of the legislature last year. Representative Wilson's bill goes to some solving this, but I don't want to get into debate of the merits of the co-op or not, because there's just a few people that seem to have a tremendous heartburn over what, you know, a poor little group of 80 people out on the Alaska Peninsula did that had no effect whatsoever on anybody else in the state. So you folks need to look at this. This is going to affect the, all it takes is somebody to sue on the Cook Inlet peacod fishery. All it takes is someone to sue on the Chatham Clarence black cod thing. All it takes is someone to sue on the Kodiak pot cod fishery. And just like Mr. Tillian said, the board would not act, and they will not act, even after this resolution. If this resolution is passed, Lance Nelson will still say, we don't have a legal bill that has changed this. So this resolution does nothing. And I take great exception and great offense that it specifically excludes, and I like to say, you folks may think that Chignik Co-op is extremely controversial, but it certainly wasn't 80% of the people out in Chignik who had no effect whatsoever on anybody else in the state. So I just don't understand the big issue. I don't understand what harm we folks did in producing a beautiful quality salmon that competed on the world marketplace against farm fish and got 50 cents a pound over the region standard. So I don't know why you folks won't help us and help the rest of the state. Everybody had a problem with halibut IFQs. I mean, half the fleet hated halibut IFQs when they came out in 1995. I was one of them. And look what we're getting for halibut nowadays, and everybody else thrilled about the halibut IFQ program. So I can go on and on about this. I'm really upset and tweaked about it after devoting a huge portion of my life to it. And like I said, the resolution will do nothing. And it won't help Clementillion, and all it's going to take is another lawsuit for someone else who seems to worry about everybody else but us poor little 100-boat fleet out in Chignik. So there you go. Hope you folks can do something to help everybody. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Rick Metzger, are you online yet? Okay, Rick is not online. Anybody in the audience wish to testify on this resolution? Sir, you want to come up, identify yourself and your affiliation, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg Cook. I live here in Douglas and have worked for the villages in Chignik for the past 20-25 years, including the Chignik Seniors Association and the Chignik Seafood Producers Cooperative. I've been asked to come and make a few points regarding some legal aspects of the resolution that's before you today. The first one I think you should be very receptive to, and that's the fundamental principle that when courts try to manage fisheries, they usually do a bad job. You've heard from a variety of fishermen across the state in a variety of different fisheries about problems that the two Grunert decisions have created because of the excessively broad brush the Alaska Supreme Court used. And I think those problems have been addressed in adequate detail for you by the Department of Law, so I don't want to go into those anymore.
Sir, before you continue, you mentioned you were asked to testify. Are you representing somebody, or are you representing yourself? What's your official capacity or non-official?
I am representing the Chignik Seniors Association. Thank you. Excuse me, I thought I said that.
You may have. I missed it. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd also like to mention one point that Justice Carpinetti wrote in the Grunert decision, describing the impact of that decision, that the court prefers a wasteful state of affairs in which only a few fishers do better than break even, and the cost of producing an inferior product is unnecessarily high. I believe it was Representative Ledoux who asked the question, which I think is principal in your deliberations here, and that was the impact of a retrospective resolution seeking to influence judicial interpretation of a pre-existing statute. I can say that, like Brian Kane, I haven't researched that precise point, but in 30 years of doing fisheries law in Alaska, I've never seen any instance in which a court has looked to a statement by a subsequent legislature in interpreting the meaning of a pre-existing statute. The classic formulation that's used by courts in terms of why they look to legislative intent includes additional words, legislative intent in adopting the statute, not legislative intent looking backwards, trying to surmise what a prior legislature should have been thinking or saying. So I think it's very important that the committee recognize that the impact of a resolution is likely to be virtually nil in affecting what any court will do. It's blowing in the wind. There is a bill right now, to the best of my knowledge, that would influence the courts, and that is Representative Wilson's bill, Senate Bill 184. If the committee wants to affect the statutory scheme, and if the committee wants to influence a court, the proper route to do that is through adoption of a statute and not through a retrospective resolution.
Representative Ledoux, did you have a question?
So I understand, Mr. Cook, you represent the Chignik Seafood, the Chignik COA, correct?
That's correct. So, and the Chignik Seiners Association. They're really two distinct legal entities.
So I guess my question to you is, since there is some concern that Representative Wilson's bill will be, if it got out of committee, would be used as a vehicle for adding on the Chignik COA, could you commit yourself on behalf of your clients that if the bill got out of this committee, that Chignik Co-op would not be added to it in either this body or in the other body?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, I don't think there's anything I could say or do that would effectively shackle any member of the legislature in exercising their legislative duties. I don't think there's anything I could say or do that would prevent you or force you from adopting amendment or proposing an amendment. So the answer to your question is no, I could not.
So you would not ask then if a legislator, for example, wished to add the Chignik Co-op onto Representative Wilson's bill, for example, you would not go to that legislator and say, this isn't what Chignik Co-op wants. We would ask you not to make that amendment.
Well, I can't, Mr. Chairman and Representative Ledoux, I can't tell you what anybody, any client is going to ask me to do on their behalf tomorrow or a month from now. So I'm sorry, of course not. No, I couldn't do that, and I'm sure you understand why.
I do understand why. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Cook? Thank you, Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Your testimony. John Hilsinger, did you want to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Hilsinger. I'm the Director of Commercial Fisheries Division. Unfortunately, our representatives from Department of Law could not be here this morning, and I certainly can't address the technical legal issues that they would bring up. But the department has reviewed the resolution, and we support the intent of the resolution. Thank you.
Any questions for John, Representative Ledoux?
Does the department think that the resolution is going to do any good?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, I think our legal people have the same questions that have been raised, and whether a court would put stock in the resolution or not, and particularly since it's has been noted, it is retroactive. So I think that's still a question that we have. But even knowing that, again, we did support the intent of it.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Fish and Game? Representative Wilson.
Thank you. And so in other words, you're saying that if your legal team was here, that they probably would be telling us that they don't think the resolution is really going to do what you guys need for it to do.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, they believe that HB 188 is the correct answer, but they're certainly willing to support this resolution in the absence of the ability to get 188 passed.
Any other questions for Comfish? Thank you, John. Appreciate you coming. Anybody else in the audience? Last call for testimony, yes?
Good morning. My name is Teresa Peterson. I'm representing myself. I just happen to be weathered in Juneau here, so I think I take the opportunity. I do testify from the LIO office in Kodiak, and I've never had the opportunity to sit before you, so I did want to introduce myself. And for the record, I am in complete support of the language in the resolution. I think that clarifies the intent of the language and gets us where we want to go with these initiatives. But I am opposed to 188. I think that leaves open doors that start bringing in management policies into the state of Alaska that are contrary to the limited entry system and open possibilities to have absentee ownership of our rights, and also leave opportunity for those who are not actively participating in the fishery to reap benefits of the fisheries. My family and I have commercial fished in Kodiak for the last 25 years. We own and operate a set net permit. We own a seine permit that we use from time to time. We participate in the Tanner crab permit fishery and the herring fishery. All of these fisheries require us to put on our boots and go fishing. I think that's when one of the most integral parts of our limited entry system that has had the maximum benefit of those of us who live in these outlying coastal communities. There's only certain ways to make livings there. And you need to be able to diversify and bounce around. And when we're trying to compete against others who aren't living in the community, who maybe have other assets that they can utilize and gain access to some of the monies coming out of the fisheries without actively participating, I think that's extremely harmful to the coastal fisheries. And in our federal system, we have a lot of management policies like the halibut sablefish IFQ that you can own those rights to the fish and never step foot on board and go. And I think that has been harmful to coastal Alaskans. And why the Chignik Co-op was innovative in its marketing, I think that type of policy is going to take us far away from where we want to get to in maintaining active participation amongst the fleet. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Teresa. Anybody else in the audience testify on the bill? If not, we're going to close public testimony. Seeing as though bills previously heard wasn't noticed. It's going to take the chairman to put that on the agenda. And we know that if there's a bill in his committee and he doesn't want it moved, it's most likely not going to move. So I look at this as the lesser of two good things. And I'll certainly support the resolution moving out if there's any committee discussion. Representative Ledoux.
You know, this, I'm going to support the resolution. But the need to do this resolution just sort of highlights an endemic kind of a structural problem around here. I mean, I think that we know that if Representative Wilson's bill had left this committee, there probably would have been things added on to Representative Wilson's bill that some of us might not have liked. I mean, that always seems to happen, and it seems to happen very often towards the end of a session. So what do you end up doing if there is a bill which even has a title that you know can be Christmas tree? I mean, it really is a problem. I mean, we should really be doing committee work in committee and not at the end of the day seeing something that hasn't even been discussed in committee on the floor of the House or in the other chamber. But unfortunately, that isn't always the case. And so sometimes people end up holding a bill which otherwise wouldn't be problematic, except that you kind of know what's going to happen to the bill. So with that said, I'll get off my soapbox, and I support the resolution.
Thank you. Any other comments from the committee before we have the sponsor get the last word? Second to last word, actually. Anybody else? Representative Seaton, you want to sum up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've had some real good discussion here, and again, you know, we've had intervening actions that have taken place, and when things are unclear in the statute, broad general powers, our interpretation of what those broad general powers are is meaningful. I believe that since there is no direction, if we at this point in time are giving our interpretation of what that direction is, I think that that will be meaningful in the future, and I think it should be meaningful not only to ourselves, and I think the Board of Fish should look at what the legislature believes the statutes mean that are the purview of the legislature, and and I think the courts will also take some notice of this if they again take up any of these circumstances where things are not defined in the law and they are broad general powers as to being how broad the legislature interprets them to mean. So that's the purpose of this, and hopefully it can get us to where we can go. And as chairman of the Fisheries Committee, my policy has always been that if any member wishes to hold an action for another hearing so that we have, you know, full vetting, or if anyone has any questions, I am, I'm not asking for this to be moved if any member wishes it to be held for a second hearing. So I just wanted to put that in the statement as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I entertain a motion to move the bill.
Objection.
There is objection. Do you want to speak to your objection?
Yes. I just wanted to put on the record that I misspoke earlier when I said that it was scheduled three times and wasn't heard. It was scheduled three times, but it was only discussed one of those times. And having said that, I think that this is all for naught because it's a resolution, but I don't have a choice, so I will remove my objection and let it pass on out.
Actually, we didn't actually have a motion, but
he objects to the motion.
You object to asking for a motion.
Oh, I see.
I'm sorry about that. That was my fault. Again, I'll ask the will of the committee. Representative Ledoux.
I'll move House Concurrent Resolution number 2225 LS 1479/C with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill is moved from committee, and we'll pass the gavel back to the chairman.
Thank you. And we have before us now House Bill 134. We are still in public hearing on this bill. I would like to let everyone know what our intentions were on this bill. We've had a lot of public hearing on it. We are now only considering version O, which is the bill dealing with sulfide minerals. And so what I would like to do is ask all those folks online that are here to testify. Our procedures for today were to try to get through public testimony, and then we have three amendments to be offered, and take the will of the committee. If public testimony takes too long, we're not going to be able to get there. So if you are online, just, you know, opposing something or supporting it, if you could just say that. If you've testified in the past, either in the field hearings or in previous hearings, then please just reiterate that you still support or oppose, unless you have specific comments on version O, that's the sulfide. So let's go to Dillingham, Billy Maines.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thank you. This is Billy Maines in Dillingham. And I have testified at the hearings that you have held in Dillingham and also on previous teleconferences dealing with House Bill 134. I will reiterate my support and my in favor of House Bill 134. I do have just a couple minor concerns with the new revision, one dealing with the violations or penalties imposed. I have a gut feeling that any incident that may occur with any permitted project that makes it through to the development stage, all it takes is one little incident to change our watershed out here. So I'm kind of feeling that maybe the penalties may not be strong enough. It's easy to... I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's fairly simple to take money out of the pocket, but it's a little bit more personable and harder to serve time. So I was thinking that maybe the possibility of incarceration is maybe one of the options for violating any of the sections of the bill would be something that the committee may consider.
Okay.
I strongly support the fact that the committee is looking at the legislature as another part of the permitting process, that oil and gas goes through that scenario, that mineral extraction on a large scale that this bill is addressing would be a favorable entity or a favorable route in my manner.
Thank you, Billy. Any questions? Seeing none, Andy DeValpine.
I'm sorry, but Andy DeValpine has already left.
Okay, thank you very much. Ron Bowers. Ron Bowers, are you there?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have, like Billy here, I've testified at your field hearings out here in Dillingham and in the past teleconferences. And as you know, I'm a 25-year resident of the region. I wholeheartedly support subsistence and protecting our fisheries and commercial fisheries. And however, I believe I'm against House Bill 134 for various reasons, but one that's very glaring that came out in Monday's testimony. I believe HB 134, as written, will violate the rights of private property owners and deprive all Alaskan citizens revenues from state lands and all Americans revenues from federally owned managed lands in Bristol Bay. And I'm just respectfully asking the House Fisheries Committee to develop an inventory of all private landowners, including native corporations throughout the Bristol Bay region, that would be affected by the tenets of HB 134. I'd also ask that a funding source be identified as a means for reimbursing those private landowners for their economic losses derived from the loss of their constitutionally protected land usage due to HB 134. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ron. Question from Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate your comments. Would you not think that it, by this being a takings and you were able to go to court and recover that, would that be adequate as opposed to setting up a special fund, would that not certainly be adequate for you to recover any loss that you have as a result of passing of this bill?
Well, I would think that would put the onerous burden on the landowner, in some cases private native allottees or even just small landowners, to have to go through that legal process would be very overwhelming to a lot of folks, and I don't think a lot of folks have that resource to do that. I'd rather see a large fund set up where folks could make some type of a claim without having to go through the court process. We can't rely on individuals going to lawsuits, every single landowner that's affected. It would just be a nightmare. It'd be like the Exxon Valdez oil spill case, and nothing would be resolved. So I'd rather see a large fund set up to reimburse those for their legal losses.
Thank you, Ron. I would just like to comment. We do have a large fund. It's called the Permanent Fund, and it's got $40 billion in it, and I think you would certainly have a right to that if we took your land inappropriately. Thank you, Ron.
I wanted to clarify something. Were you talking, we had some previous testimony about different landowners, such as I think it was 7i, and I forget what all the 7i, 8i, the corporations and their ability to gain revenue from other developed native land. Is that what you were talking about, or were you talking about an individual like mine owner? Which were you alluding to?
I'm mostly concerned with private landowners, whether it be native corporations or individuals being impacted by this. And I did hear a rather compelling testimony on Monday from one of the Angusons over from South Naknek that spoke yesterday Monday on this issue. And it's not just native corporations that are a major player, but any private land impacted, such as Lake and Panbara, or anybody who's impacted economically by taking away the right for them to utilize their land, I think needs to be reimbursed. And I don't want to see us raiding the permanent fund for that. I think people wouldn't be too happy with that at all.
Right.
So I have no idea how many private landowners there are. I'm not sure of the process, how we can go about to figure that out, but I'm sure it could be done.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate it. Let's go to Sam Fertier. I don't know how you pronounce that name. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, this is Sam Fortier, and you're doing just fine on it. Sam Fortier, I'm representing today Petro Bay Corporation. I spoke at your Dillingham hearing earlier, expressed Petro Bay's opposition as well as the opposition of other of my clients. Petro Bay itself owns about 90,000 acres of land on the east end of Lake Iliamna. It is at present in a neutral position with respect to whether or not the Pebble Mine ought to be developed, but it opposes strongly House Bill 134. It believes that House Bill 134 will turn out the lights so that the fearmongers, with no findings of fact at all, can dictate what Petro Bay does on its own lands, and that's wrong. Petro Bay Corporation, following up with what Mr. Bowers pointed out, is a private landowner, and it has legitimate investment-backed expectations in the use of their lands for economic gain. Those lands, the Petro Bay lands, provide the only rational transportation route from the richest ore body in North America to Cook Inlet. That transportation route, even if the mine was never built, would significantly reduce cost of goods and services, create good jobs, and allow Petro Bay shareholders to return home. Your bill, House Bill 134, if it would pass, immediately would halt those opportunities. It would render Petro Bay service contracts a nullity, and it would displace Petro Bay's hopes and dreams for economic survival, and would continue the diaspora of the Petro Bay shareholders who are scattered all over the world now.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to add that the bill itself is irrational in several ways. I note that you proposed to try and fix one of those ways by inserting the term gold, which seems to me to be a rather significant omission from the initial bill. You also have left open what sulfide mining operations really are. I'd refer you to Alaska Stat 2720060, which defines mining operations to include not only the mine, but all the transportation, communications, and utility routes that go along with that development. All of those would be foreclosed with the adoption of House Bill 134. Pedro Bay Corporation is strongly opposed to the bill.
Thank you very much. Was there a question? Representative Ledoux.
I was just wondering whether any of the other entities in Pedro Bay, for example, the village council, whether they've weighed in on the bill or not.
Representative Ledoux, that's a good question. I think you represent that area, and you're aware of the fact that the village council, and only the village council, has opposed the construction of the mine.
Thank you.
Pedro Bay Corporation's position is more in line with that of Native corporations throughout the state, which recognize that stopping mining in Bristol Bay is going to have a profound effect on the regional corporation's responsibilities under Section 7I of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which mandates that 70% of all resource revenues derived from subsurface activities be shared with roughly 200 village corporations and 12 regional corporations throughout the state.
Okay, thank you very much. Other questions? Patrick Flatley?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. And Patrick, have you also, I think you can probably hear our bells ringing, so if you've testified before, would you very quickly summarize for us any specifics on version O?
I will keep it very short, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank you for this opportunity, and a special thanks to Representative Edgman and the co-sponsors for introducing House Bill 134. My name is Patrick Flatley. I've been working with the Bristol Bay Alliance as the Reach Out Coordinator for the past 4 years. The Bristol Bay Alliance is a true Alaskan grassroots 501c3 membership-funded nonprofit corporation. When I say true Alaskan grassroots, I mean we only accept membership fees and donations from residents of Alaska, folks that vote here. We were formed to help instill in all Alaskans that, especially you and all the stakeholders we call risk holders in the Bristol Bay watershed now, the desire to learn objective facts as well as the recent history of the industrial activity known as hard rock, open pit, and underground metallic sulfide chemical mining, and then provide an information resource for those folks. We strongly support and urge you to move.
Mr. Flatley, did we lose you? I think we got that you supported and you wanted us to move the bill, so appreciate your testimony there. Heath Hilliard, are you online? Or in Anchorage?
Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record. Heath Hilliard from Alaska Supply Chain Integrators. I'm the business development manager and external affairs manager for that company. In deference to the committee's time, and I know that the bells are ringing, I'll simply say that we oppose HB 134 version O, or actually any version we've seen thus far. I will reserve my comments with regard to some of the specific components because it looks like the amendments before you may address some of the points that I have, and I will just submit the entirety of my testimony to your committee later today in written form.
Thank you, and further testimony can be submitted, and it will follow the bill. We have, did I hear someone? Sharon Anderson, are you online? We are running out of time, so if you could.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still am on. Again, I'm Sharon Anderson. I reside in Anchorage, and I did speak in March of 2007 to the subcommittee, and I still oppose any version of House Bill 134, especially this version, since it seems to be more slanted towards bringing an end to the mining industry in Alaska, more than one of protection and conservation of our anadromous fish resources. I want to talk specifically about singling out the sulfide mining operations because it implies that responsible mining and any resource development, it doesn't exist, even when these industries are really monitored closely through Alaska state and federal laws and regulations. and it completely ignores the stringent mining regulations that are requiring state-of-the-art engineering design, pollution prevention, technology, monitoring, and financial guarantees to ensure that the mines are built and are operated and they're reclaimed to the highest environmental standards. There are many environmental responsible mines operating successfully in environmentally sensitive settings like Alaska. And this proves that sulfide mining can be done in an environmentally responsible manner. Advances in mining practices have enabled modern miners to better predict, plan for, and prevent adverse environmental impacts. It has been demonstrated that the long-term environmental impacts of sulfide mining, principally to water quality and air quality, can be adequately addressed.
Hey, Sharon?
Yep.
Do you have,
I'll give it all to you later.
Okay, appreciate that.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ann. Let's go. We're trying to get through the list here. Gail Phillips, do you have a further testimony specifically on version O?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I do. And my testimony today specifically relates to the takings issue. I have submitted my written testimony to your office this morning. I would appreciate it being included, but I wanted to just reiterate the legislature's responsibility when it comes to the takings issue and how you are sworn to protect the state of Alaska from unwarranted lawsuits and unlawful take of our lands and resources. And I feel that this legislation will do just that. So please consider my written testimony. I won't go any further, but also, Mr. Chairman, would you give us the name of the committee aide to send the information into?
Yes, it would be Louis Flora, F-L-O-R-A, in my office.
Okay, thank you very
appreciate
much.
Appreciate that. We have Jason Byrne. Bruni, did you testify earlier, Jason?
He wasn't there last time.
Okay.
I have testified, but not to version O.
Okay, do you have some very specific comments on version O?
I do, and thank you for the opportunity to comment. For the record, my name is Jason Bruni. I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council. I am testifying today in opposition to HB 134 version O. I did have the privilege of attending the hearings this committee held in Southwest Alaska, and I commend the committee for taking the time to listen to the input of local residents. But at the same time, it's imperative to note this bill would have a much greater impact than on just one mine. It has the potential to impact nearly 20 million acres, both state land and BBNC land. With respect to Representative Ledoux's question on Monday about whether Calista has an economic dog in this fight, I thought it was imperative to clarify that all ANCSA companies have an economic interest in this bill. 7I and subsequently 7J royalties derived from natural resource extraction on native lands are shared throughout the state. So ultimately, this bill is as important to Sea Alaska shareholders in Southeast as it is to ASRC shareholders in Barrow or BBNC shareholders throughout Southwest Alaska. For example, with respect to the Red Dog Mine, this year alone, $36 million will be distributed throughout the state to both the regional and village corporations. As I've indicated before on the record, Alaska's state and federal permitting processes are second to none. These permitting processes are extremely rigorous, and I'm left questioning how this bill, version O, provides for more rigor. To me, this bill appears to merely lock up land to sulfide mining. I think it is important to note that this land has been designated for mining in state planning documents.
Hey, Jason, thank you. I'm going to have to we appreciate your testimony.
I implore this committee to vote against passing this bill on to the next committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Norman Van Bachter.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to call in today and testify in support of House Bill 134, version O specifically. My name is Norman Van Vacker, and I represent myself and Snowpack Products. 2008 will mark the 25th anniversary of Snowpack Products' involvement in Alaska's fisheries. We feel blessed by the incredible renewable resource that exists today and feel that it deserves to be protected. Adoption of House Bill 134, version O, would be a significant step in doing just that. A recent demonstration of our belief in the strength of this renewable resource and our commitment to the region was our recent purchase of what was a shuttered seafood processing plant located at the mouth of the Wood River on the Nooshiegak drainage. Our ability as a business and industry to build, create, and innovate is directly dependent upon the health of our resource and the natural habitat that nurtures it. First and foremost, the habitat demands a pure and pristine environment. Secondarily, the villages, communities, and natural resources that are sustained downstream demand it. Our new plan and investment in the region would be reshuttered in a heartbeat if a water quality problem developed upstream. What we have is truly an incredible resource that demands extraordinary protection. We are in a unique position in the world in that we can protect this existing resource.
Norman?
Elsewhere.
Norman, I really appreciate that. I think that we've got the gist of your comments here. Can you send your final comments in writing there for us?
I sure can, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
And again, folks, we're trying to get really wrapped up here. If you've testified previously and you are reiterating your testimony, I'd appreciate you passing. We have that testimony on the record. Version only, please. Wassily Elustek?
Hello.
Yes. Hello. Go ahead.
So, yes, my name is Wassily Elustek. I live here in the village of Elekrik. I am against House Bill 134 because it will block any kind of economic development in Brisbane Native Corporation, all the village corporation, all the native allotments. You know, that could start to make me millions and millions of dollars. You know, a couple of years ago, I towed a speedboat up a Goolwalk River. The day was flat, calm, hot, sunny. So about halfway up, I was getting real thirsty, so I told my wife to get me a cup of water from the river. And when she gave it to me, it tasted like gas. So I told a couple of gassy and told her to give me with a different cup of water.
Wassily?
Yes.
I'm sorry, we haven't been able to get through. We have four people left, and that will close public testimony. We'll have to take it up on Friday. We'll have to take up the...
I'll be here on Friday.
You're not going to be here on Friday. We'll have somebody... We just can't get through it and can't get through committee discussion. So we have...
Could I call back on Friday?
Yes, you may. We have the...
What time does it start?
We have the four people that will be there, and we can do those, and we'll have some amendments before us. We'll also be having a overview from the last Department of Fish and Game on salmon management and overescapement and foregone harvest valuations on Friday, and so we'll have to do those things at the same time. Sorry, we couldn't.
What time does it start? 8:30 in the morning, or?
The sponsor
yes.
won't be here.
The sponsor is not going to be here, but we will have the public testimony, and we'll see where we can get through on this. So with that, the bells have been ringing. We're past. We're going to have to leave.